I actually think that the decline question, West is in decline. By the way, the best speech at Davos this year at the World Economic Forum was given by the insane president of Argentina, Javier Milei, where he gave a speech about the West in decay. And said, we have to defend the West against the barbarians and so on. There's a lot of this talk that's been going around, defend the West. You know, Trump is, of course, famous for, U.S. President Trump is famous for this kind of language of decline that needs to be reversed. You know, the decay and decline that needs to be reversed. But in fact, one has to be a little more careful about that assessment. So again, in the work of our institute, we operate with the sense that there are five controls that an imperialist power requires. Three of those controls the West is finding are being contested, but not two of them. And this will be familiar from what I presented. The first control is control over raw materials. The West no longer has command over raw materials, despite the fact that Rio Tinto and so on have such great offices. I mean, the Niger government has said, we want to control our uranium. Countries around the world are saying, we would like to have a better share of royalty of our various reserves. Congo is putting its foot down on some agreements and so on. It's contested. It's not that it is lost. Second, control over finance is contested. 70% of developing countries are under US sanctions. They have been trying to do runarounds the dollar. China and Russia themselves largely trade outside the dollar. Again, it's contested. There is going to be no de-dollarization likely in my lifetime, because no other country is going to open its assets for free buying and selling. You can't become the reserve currency if you have capital controls. And the Chinese are never going to give up capital controls on their currency. Very unlikely the yuan will be the reserve currency. I don't see any other currency coming in. There's some talk of a BRICS currency, maybe the SDRs in the IMF and so on, but these don't feel to me legitimate at this time. So it's not that the whole financial system is going to change overnight. So you can rest easy about your pensions. But on the other hand, it's contested. People are contesting it. The third area of contestation is science and technology. I mean, until 10 years ago, it would have been inconceivable that many of us would carry telephones from non-Euro-American countries. You know, used to be Nokia, then the Apples came in, and blah, 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 right? Now, I mean, I don't know about you, but like in places like India, Southeast Asia, on the African continent, almost everywhere except South Africa, most people have Korean and Chinese phones. Most people. It's either Huawei, Honor, something like that. If they have a phone, it's a Korean and Chinese phone or a flip phone that's made in some smaller manufacturing company, knockoffs and so on. People can't afford to buy the American commodities. You know, the Apple phone is super expensive. So you buy an Honor phone or something like that. So science and technology is contested. There are two areas, no contest. Number one is the military, what I mentioned earlier. Nobody can actually take on the United States. Now, people have argued and said, well, you know, the US lost in Afghanistan. Okay, yes, the military had to withdraw. But they destroyed Afghanistan. I mean, the US can flatten a city. It can't necessarily govern places, but they can just bomb the place. You know, the Iranians are not worried that the US will come in and occupy Iran. They'll be fought every step of the way. It's usually a patriotic country. But they can flatten Tehran. They can flatten Qom. They can flatten Mashhad. They can flatten the major cities. Iranians just don't want that, you know. I mean, the US is never going to invade China. It's crazy. It's unthinkable. Even there's been no movie that I know of made of a US invasion of China. Even filmmakers can't imagine it. But US missiles could flatten Shanghai. They could flatten Beijing very fast. Dangerous. No military contest. The fifth area of control where there's no contest is information. None at all. How quickly and easily it was for the United States, their media, and one guy living outside Washington, D.C., a German right-wing conservative, so easy to convince the whole world about a genocide in Xinjiang. And yet, till today, 11, 12 months after, 13, 14 months after the genocide in Palestine, people hesitate to use the word. Well, it's not really a genocide, you know. Well, Hamas did this, and their control over the information system is complete. You know, if they say you're a genocide denier, you're a genocide denier. That's on your, it's on your gravestone. I mean, I was surprised before I arrived in New Zealand that there was this text circulating about me saying he denies all these genocides. And I was thinking, you know, you'll get academics from the United States funded by Open Society, Rockefellers, you know, Oppenheimer Foundation, Ford Foundation. I've never heard anybody being criticized in a letter, being said, you know, you've received funding from the Fulbright Foundation, which has helped in the coup d'etat. I've never seen that in my life. You know, I looked around on the internet for people coming from the US to Australia. Nothing. From England, coming with money from the Rhodes Foundation. That's Cecil Rhodes, okay? He's the guy who seized, you know, large parts of Africa, killed millions of people. People coming with Belgian foundation money, money that was stolen by King Leopold from Belgium. I don't see anybody being condemned. But when I was coming here, you deny the Uyghur genocide, you deny the Tamil genocide. I thought, really? How did you get that? You know, from one article which I wrote about the JVP as part of the NPP alliance winning an election in Sri Lanka, and one tweet I sent when I was in Sri Lanka saying, this beach is beautiful. Somebody said, how can he say the beach is beautiful? There's a genocide down the road. It's the complete enveloping of the human brain by the Western information system. Complete enveloping of the human brain by the Western. There's no contestation. The Russians, Chinese, they are accused of disinformation. They don't know how to do it. Who watches Chinese news? One or two people, that's it. RT is banned in so many countries. The information system is total. People's brains are taken over. You watch this stuff, you absorb information. I mean, if the Russians were bombing the Ukrainians like the Israelis are bombing the Palestinians, you would get 24/7 footage of neighborhoods wiped out. But they are not bombing the Ukrainians like the Israelis are bombing the Palestinians. And yet, there are probably people in Australia who think that the Russian invasion of Ukraine is worse than the Israelis bombing the Palestinians because of Hamas. And that's the information control, which is almost total. And there may be some people in this room who believe that the Russian invasion of Ukraine is worse than the Israeli bombing of the Palestinians. That's the stunning part of it. I mean, what does one say about the NAM? It's been there, but it's been dormant for decades, and it has been unable to move an agenda. I wrote a book called The Poorer Nations, which makes the argument that in fact the BRICS has surmounted the NAM. The BRICS is basically creating a new NAM, you know, by expanding. So the NAM exists, but it's largely an irrelevant body. I'm really interested in the things people could do in a country like this. You know, for instance, after the horrendous NATO destruction of Libya and the racist sidelining of the African Union delegation, which was sitting on an airfield in Addis Ababa, ready to go to both Benghazi, a second visit actually, to Benghazi and to Tripoli to meet with the two sides in the conflict. That was a plane filled with heads of government and others, including Jacob Zuma of South Africa, who was then the president. They were told by NATO, do not take off, we are bombing. Just when they were ready to go on a peace mission, NATO told them, you can't fly, we're bombing, sorry, you are canceled. This is on the African continent, where the African Union should have had some sovereignty over NATO bombers. and they were told to sit down and shut up while NATO conducted its bombing raid. In the aftermath of that, the African Union had a multiple year discussion, and eventually in 2016, its Peace and Security Council passed a resolution against foreign military bases on African soil. Our institute wrote a dossier on it. Basically, this resolution has been ignored by the world press. There's no real press that covers the African Union proceedings. It's treated as a complete sideshow. I think that's super racist. I mean, I bet that the Australian media, or what is it, the Murdoch media, doesn't bother to cover what these, you know, what the deliberations are in the African Union. They think it's all useless, they are irrelevant. What's really important is the African subcommittee of the US State Department. Cover that to learn about Africa. Don't bother about what Africans think. But why can't there be a movement for no foreign military bases on the Australian soil? I mean, if the African Union can do it, why can't there be a move from legislator to legislator, starting with the most favorable province, where there's some place to start a discussion? What's the point of having green representatives in the West Australian parliament if they are not going to table at least a discussion about foreign military presence on your soil? What's the point? I mean, then they should just resign, you know? I mean, I don't see the point of being in a parliament if you're not going to put your agenda forward, however fruitless that possibility of it passing. You keep hammering on, and that's important. And the second thing is, it's pretty ridiculous that the Australian federal government and provincial governments are using your funds to build military facilities for the Americans. I mean, you are paying for the expansion of Tyndall to place B-1 and B-52 bombers there with nuclear weapons in violation of a treaty your government signed, Treaty of Rarotonga, nuclear-free South Pacific. Your government is a signatory, and yet you're going to allow US nuclear bombers to come and station in Darwin within flight distance of China. Instead, why not spend that money to build one train that links Sydney to Canberra? The major city, biggest city, and the capital. There's no train. It's ridiculous. I mean, what is this? You know, there should be a train that runs from Canberra to Melbourne.
There is one.
Really?
Yes.
It carries passengers?
Yes.
Is it a high-speed rail?
No.
You see, I understand that Australia has a lot of coal. You're going to keep digging coal and so on. I get it. It takes time to transition. You know, being an Indian, it's hard for me to criticize that. We are also in a long transition. But why allow people to fly when they can use the train? Why have domestic flights, at least in that part of the country? I don't know this. This is my second day in Western Australia. First time here, second day. I don't know exactly what cities you could build a train to, okay? But I'm sure there are places. I mean, this province is the size bigger than Europe. There must be other places than Perth. I don't know if there are trains going there, yeah? I mean, these bread and butter choices, you know, guns and butter choices. Do you want to spend your precious social wealth on a base for the Americans, or do you want to build public utilities for yourselves? It's a basic constitutional discussion. Is this a country for Australians or for the United States? I mean, I know this used to be a country for Great Britain without a treaty and so on. I know it used to be basically a British country, still have a king and so on. But it seems that you're basically a country for the United States. And that's something that if you have self-respect, my dear Australians, you would fix.
Escalationists, the thought of Western hegemony being maintained continually from here is too much for me to bear. So I'm wondering if maybe you tempered your responses because you're on camera, but I feel like I've been given a bleak outcome.
Yes. No, it's actually not a bleak outcome. But I wanted to also speak a little bit against the triumphalism that exists in among a lot of people who believe that somehow the West is done and that multipolarity is here and they celebrate the BRICS summit in Kazan and so on. This is a very long road and there's going to be a lot of dangerous things ahead. There will be a lot of ugly conflicts. The very fact that this even neo-Westphalian idea has not been able to stop, just stop, this genocidal bombing in Gaza is actually a sign of our deep weakness. It's a sign of our weakness. And what I'm suggesting to you is that our principal weakness lies in the enduring hegemony of the United States and its bloc over weapons and information. That is where the enduring hegemony lies. And it's not going to be undone by more weapons. The Chinese and others getting bigger weapons, and that's not the way forward. The way forward is to fight for disarmament. The way forward is to rebuild the peace movement. You know, I was in New Zealand, as I said. New Zealand had an incredible campaign for nuclear disarmament. New Zealand's people fought to create a treaty against nuclear weapons. But it's dead. I met one of the daughter of the founder of the CND. It's dead. Australia, I mean, IPAN exists. But for God's sake, it's not a vibrant, lively thing. Lots of young people, you know, maybe young people for a while were motivated by climate change. But that has also demoralized people. You know, they are not out on the streets. And look at the information order. When Greta Thunberg was standing there and talking about climate, they kind of lifted her up in the international media as this, you know, young child who's incredible and so on. The moment she naturally radicalized and started talking about Palestine, closed. That's the evidence of how the information system works. If she's acceptable, it's on their terms. When she's not on their terms, unacceptable. We have to fight this. We have to fight against this kind of information hegemony. You know, we have to fight to build a more robust picture of the world. That means that all of us have a responsibility. You know, you can't expect to read a newspaper, change its position. It means we have to be out there talking to people, building movements. Movements are the best information system in a society as far as any kind of socialist or peace idea is concerned. No mainstream publication is really going to commit itself to peace. There's too much money in war. The only information system for peace is the movement. That's it. That wasn't bleak. Thanks.